And indeed it is 5:30 here at Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. It's time for Rockin' the Boat. My name is the V-Man. And today on the show, we'll be speaking with Sami Awad about nonviolence and the Palestinian struggle for human and national rights. All that coming up. We're going to be discussing a lot of the recent news as well as some of his work with the Holy Land Trust, a Palestinian not-for-profit organization. But we'll get the details in just a moment. Stand by. Stay tuned. Rockin' the Boat coming up straight ahead. Sami Awad, my guest today. In a direct challenge to Abu Mazen's commitment to the Roadmap Peace Plan, a brazen attack at dawn by Palestinian gunmen left four Israeli soldiers dead early Monday. Responsibility for the attack, which took place at the main crossing between Israel and the Gaza Strip, was claimed by Hamas, Islamic Jihad, and the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade. A joint statement from the groups read in part, "This joint operation was committed to confirm our people's united choice of holy war and resistance until the end of occupation over our land and holy places." In other news, Israeli soldiers today began dismantling the first of 94 illegal settlement outposts in the West Bank in a gesture of commitment to the U.S.-backed peace plan. Today on Rockin' the Boat, we'll discuss these issues and the prospect for peace with my guest, Sami Awad, the director of the Holy Land Trust, a Palestinian not-for-profit organization established in 1998 in Bethlehem in the West Bank with the aim of strengthening and improving the Palestinian community. By educating children with the creation of community awareness programs, the Holy Land Trust aims to inject a non-violent approach to resisting the Israeli occupation. Sami Awad will be in Santa Cruz tomorrow speaking on nonviolence and the Palestinian struggle for national human rights. And he joins me now by telephone. Sami Awad, it's great to have you with us here on Rockin' the Boat.
Thank you, Vinny. It is a pleasure for me to be with you this afternoon.
Can you begin by just giving our listeners a little bit of background about your work with the Holy Land Trust and how it was started in 1998?
Yes, Holy Land Trust, as you said, is an indigenous Palestinian organization. And the mission of Holy Land Trust and how we started working is the question, as Palestinians, what can we do to continuously strengthen and encourage the community which we are a part of? And that is done for us on two major fronts. The first is, what can we do as Palestinians and what should we do as Palestinians to attain liberation and freedom for our people? And the important question to us is, after we do attain freedom and liberation, then what kind of state will we have? What will Palestine look like? Will it be democracy or not in the Middle East? Will it be similar to other regimes that exist in that part of the world? So we found that one of the most important things that we do and we have to do as Palestinians is to develop nonviolent approaches to first resist the occupation and then using these same approaches to building a democratic and free Palestinian society.
And your group, in fact, works with some of the people who have been engaged in armed conflict. Is that right?
Well, we strongly believe that nonviolence is an approach that can achieve the goals and aspirations of the Palestinians. If we did not believe that freedom can come through nonviolence, we wouldn't be engaging in such activities. And in turn, we try to work and to convince other Palestinians that nonviolence is not just simply a passive acceptance of the occupation. Nonviolence does not mean negotiations or a dialogue. It takes powerful steps. It is a process that takes a lot of dedication, hard work, commitment, and so on. And this is what we try to convince these groups that are engaged in armed resistance, that armed resistance is not going to achieve the goals of the Palestinian people and their aspirations, and we have to develop these alternative and very direct resistance approaches. And as part of that, we have actually done training with groups of people in the Bethlehem area who had been previously engaged in armed resistance activities and have now become and are committed leaders in the Palestinian nonviolent struggle.
Can you talk a little bit about some of the process that some of these people go through to gain a new way of thinking and a new way of struggling?
Yes. Well, since this current intifada, the uprising began, it was not actually easy to talk to Palestinians about re-engaging in nonviolence. And I want to say re-engaging because Palestinians had been in the past very involved in different forms of nonviolent resistance. During the first uprising, intifada in 1987, a lot of the activities conducted by Palestinians then were nonviolent in nature. And even our nonviolent activities go back during the British Mandate in 1936. So as this current intifada began, we tried to talk to people about the need to develop a nonviolent approach to resisting the occupation. And in all honesty, it was not a topic that was accepted by many to hear. Many of these groups were very engaged in armed resistance, and they felt and they saw that what they were doing was achieving the goals and aspirations of the Palestinian people. It took a very tragic series of events that happened last year, where there was this new awakening in wanting to understand what nonviolence is and how people can engage in it. And the two incidents that I'm sure your listeners would remember are the siege of the Church of Nativity in Bethlehem, which lasted for 40 days, and also the tragic massacres that happened in Jenin and the refugee camp in Jenin, as well as Nablus, the incursion into Ramallah, and other Palestinian cities. And that was sort of an awakening for some Palestinians that reached the point of saying, well, what has the armed resistance achieved for us at this time, at this junction? And look at the death and destruction that has also been present in the Palestinian community by Israeli actions and activities, and the realization that the small guns we have and arms we have are not going to be able to fight off the U.S.-made F-16 fighter jets or tanks and so on. And that's when there was this call to research and develop nonviolent activities, and that has been spreading throughout the Palestinian territories.
My guest today is Sami Awad. He is the executive director of the Holy Land Trust, a Palestinian not-for-profit organization. He'll be speaking in Santa Cruz tomorrow at the Resource Center for Nonviolence. This is Rockin' the Boat here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. And Sami, let's talk a little bit about the current state of affairs right now. Given you sort of posed a question at the top, and I'm curious maybe if you can envision that this roadmap for peace will ever wind its way, the Palestinians will have a state of their own. You'll have a state of your own. And I'm wondering what you think that state would look like. What is your vision of what that country would look like, given the current leadership and the sort of turmoil that seems to be happening with Abu Mazen, and there doesn't seem to be much popular support for him? Can you maybe talk a little bit about that?
Yes. One thing that is important to note is that not many people, and I can even say on either side of this conflict, are optimistic about this current roadmap and the peace process that is part of it. And many people are looking at what is happening with this roadmap as another charade or another act, conspiracy. And that's in the Palestinian community, I say that is, again, not addressing the very important and vital issues for the Palestinians, which some of them are, for example, refugees, settlements, Jerusalem, and the final borders. All of these issues, again, similar to the Oslo peace process, have been thrown to the back shelf and are not to be negotiated until the future. And many Palestinians see this as something very similar to what happened in Oslo, and again, leading to its disastrous failure. And I think that the region will not be able to handle another failure. The other side looking at this is saying that, well, this is, as they say, the only game in town. And the U.S. has signed off on it, the Europeans, Russia, UN have signed off, the Palestinians have fully accepted it, and the Israeli government has also accepted it with numerous reservations to it. So let us see what we could do with this process. What is important, if we want to see this process as working, that we as Palestinians have to see clear and tangible results and a tangible commitment to peace. We cannot simply do a security arrangement for Israel. We cannot simply take measures to, by force, to stop acts of violence and attacks similar to and like suicide attacks and so on. There has to be a process where the population is engaged, where organizations are involved, where there is a clear monitoring of this peace process by the international community, and very importantly is that pressure has to be imposed on both sides of the conflict to implement what they have agreed on.
If pressure
is not imposed, then again this whole thing will fail and collapse.
Where do you suppose that pressure should be put applied from?
Well, it is very clear to me that Israel, for example, is a country that seems to not accept necessarily any form of pressure, like by the European community, and even more sadly by the United Nations. And we saw this last year when, for example, the United Nations called for an investigation into the Jenin massacre, and even the U.S. signed off on that resolution for the international community to come and see what happened in Jenin, and Israel simply said, no, we're not going to allow you in. Any other country that would have said no would have had immediate sanctions put on them, immediate pressures, diplomatic actions, economic pressures, and so on. So I believe the pressure comes here and from the United States on Israel. If any country can put any pressure on Israel for the sake, I think, of Israel and for the sake of peace, then it has to be here in the United States and by the Americans.
But what, I guess my question then becomes, I mean, the United States clearly is in support of Israel to the tune of up to $5 billion a year in military aid. And as you mentioned, the UN, consistently, 36 times, I believe, they have blocked resolutions that were going down against Israel for some action or another. And I'm curious then, with that track record, it doesn't seem like the U.S. can be an honest arbiter of peace in this process, in my opinion. I'm wondering what you think of that.
Well, I agree with that. But there is a new reality that exists, and the U.S. has shown that currently, at least the current administration, that it wants to be involved in some sort of finding a resolution to the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. And I think that what the U.S. needs to understand, and I think it's a difficult process for them to understand, is that for the sake of Israel, we are not telling the U.S. to start opposing Israel or stop supporting Israel or to go against Israel, and we know that will probably never happen. But what I'm saying is that for the sake of Israel, the U.S. needs to put the necessary pressures on Israel in order to abide by what Israel has agreed to do. That is not going to be easy, and I guess you have here something called tough love, if we want to compare it to something like that. But that's what the U.S. has to do, and I think this effort has to be led by people here in the U.S. saying that We have to work for peace and for Israel and for the sake of Israel's security and its ability to live and develop strong relations with its neighbors. And Israel will have these neighbors for a very, very long time to come. They don't have a choice in that. And in order to work for peace, the U.S. has to do these measures, putting pressure on Israel, and that can be through the economics, through loan guarantees, through insisting that the money, for example, does not go to the building of settlements and settlers-only roads in the West Bank and Gaza, but that this money will go to develop peace efforts and develop relations between Palestinians and Israelis.
Sorry, I just had a disturbance for there for a moment. I'm speaking with Sami Awad. He's a member of the Holy Land Trust, a not-for-profit Palestinian organization. And I guess, I the lens that we see the issue through here in the United States, you were talking a little earlier about how people in the U.S. kind of need to put pressure on our government to take some action. I guess I'm wondering, I mean, the lens we see it, we hear about, you know, suicide bombings, we hear about what that's like all the time in the mainstream media, but we don't often hear about what life is like, and I'm wondering if you can give us just a little bit of a taste of what it's like under curfew and to live with, you know, the smell of death and you know, what it's like for people there on the ground in the occupied territories.
Yeah, while not denying the fear and insecurity that many Israelis live in, there has to also be an understanding, as you said, of what Palestinians face and suffer on a daily and continuous basis, and which is something that U.S. media has ignored for a very long time and in very long periods to work on and to concentrate on and to bring to view to the American public. I live in Bethlehem, and Bethlehem is a city now that is an actual prison. And we used to say a prison when we used to talk about the checkpoints that prevent people from going in and out, or the roadblocks that were put on certain roads that locked and blocked the roads from transportation and product transportation and so on. But what is happening now is a literal fence is being built around Bethlehem, creating a literal prison with only one way out. Palestinians need permits to go anywhere. We used to need permits, for example, just to go to Israel to work or to go to Jerusalem. Now we need a permit to leave this prison if we want to go to another prison camp like Ramallah or Hebron or anything like that. In addition to these prisons, all Palestinian cities, towns, and villages are under direct Israeli occupation. The Israeli army has control over our streets, over our buildings, over our homes, neighborhoods, and so on. And that, with all of these measures that are taken, is still not preventing those individuals who have reached the point of absolute hopelessness in their life to commit acts such as suicide attacks and so on. So all of these measures that are taken by Israel are not providing security for the Israeli people. They are doing the opposite, just creating more anger and more frustration and more feeling of hopelessness within the Palestinian community. In regards to curfews, the curfews we have in Palestine are very, very different than the curfews that many Americans hear about or know about in their community. Actually, curfews in the U.S. are wonderful things where you have control over children staying out late at night and communities encourage children and families to be together at certain points in the evening and so on. Curfews for us mean that we are continuously under house arrest. With me, my wife, and my daughter, when we are under curfew, I cannot leave the apartment building where I live. I cannot go to work. I cannot take my daughter to a doctor if she feels ill. We cannot go visit anybody. Nobody can go to school. We cannot step outside of our apartment building, or we could be threatened to be arrested, or worse than that, be shot by an Israeli sniper who would be in another location around the neighborhood that we wouldn't know about. And these curfews last for days on end. And what the question is, well, how do you get your food when you need it? What happens during these curfews is that the Israeli army would lift the curfew 2 hours every 5, 6, or 7 days. And in these 2 hours, that's the only time you have to go out of your home and take care of very important issues like buying food, going to doctors, buying medicine, and so on. So it is a very, very oppressive life that we live under occupation in Palestine. And again, all of these measures are not providing the Israeli people with the security that they are looking for and they want. And the only way to be able to reach that point where they do feel secure is by both sides addressing the root causes of this conflict. This conflict is not a conflict of weapons. It is not a conflict of suicide attacks. It is not a conflict of negotiations. It is a conflict of an occupation. One group of people occupying another. One group of people controlling the lives of another. The oppressor and the oppressed mentality. And until we get out of that understanding and create a new awareness, in my opinion, that's the only way we could reach an end to the occupation and achieve peace and security for the peoples of that region.
My guest is Sami Awad. He is the executive director of the Holy Land Trust, a Palestinian not-for-profit organization with the aim of strengthening and improving the Palestinian community. He's joining me by phone here on Rockin' the Boat. We have about 6 or 7 minutes left, and I guess maybe we should talk a little bit about some solutions. Sami, I'm wondering, first about occupation. You brought it up, and I have a question about Ariel Sharon. He recently used that term in a press conference, acknowledging the Israeli occupation of the Palestinian lands and saying that it was bad for Israel. What do you make of these statements? Do you think Ariel Sharon is being sincere when he starts talking about statehood? Do you trust him?
My first and immediate reaction is to say no. I believe that is part of a game or a play or a charade that is being done. Sharon wants to present the image to the Western world, and especially to the American public, that he is a man of peace and that he wants peace, and that, again, it's the Palestinian side that are refusing this. One thing very important to note from what Sharon said when he talked about occupation is that he said that the Palestinian people are occupied, but the land isn't occupied. That the Palestinian people need some sort of arrangement done for them, but the land continues to be the land of Israel. And they are not recognizing this very basic and important fact that UN resolutions have determined, international law has determined, that the land occupied in 1967 is occupied territories. Israel is still not accepting this very important premise in the resolution of this conflict. So the question is, what does it mean when Sharon says the people are occupied and we have to give a homeland to the people? And this is what we feel is happening now, is that what Israel is doing, and they're doing it on the ground by building a very big, thick, ugly wall around Palestinian condensed population areas, is that they are going to give us the freedom in these prison camps. And this will be our state, and this will be our freedom. And according to the map that Sharon has drawn, that Israel, in addition to all of the land that they have confiscated, will additionally take 60% of the areas of the West Bank and create these prison camps or bandu stands for Palestinians to live in. This is what peace means to Sharon. This is what an independent Palestinian state means to Sharon. Again, ignoring the very important issues, and again, leading to growing anger and frustration within the Palestinian community, and again, many Palestinians seeing that the only way out of this is through revenge and acts like the ones that are suicide attacks that result in killing Israeli civilians.
Well, we just have a few moments left, Sammy, and I wonder maybe if you can give us a few thoughts on some solutions to this conflict. I mean, you laid it out pretty clearly that Israel needs to give up the occupation. How can we get to that place, and what role do you think, as a Christian, what role do you think faith plays in this conflict? This is something I don't bring up much on my show, but this is clearly part of the equation in this discussion. And I'm wondering if you think Muslims and Jews and Christians can all work together to develop a nonviolent approach, along with the politicians in this conflict. In our final few minutes that we have,
I will start at the end. In terms of the role of religion, I think it is very important for people to understand that this is not a conflict of hundreds and thousands of years that just is too enormous and too big to be resolved. Up until 1948, my family, which is Christian, lived in a neighborhood in Jerusalem that had both Muslims and Jews living in it, and they all lived there together. Even in a non-democratic state under the Ottoman Empire and the British Mandate and the British occupation, they had very wonderful relationships with each other. So this is a very important point to be made. The nonviolent movement in Palestine is also not a Christian movement. It is a movement that all Palestinians who are interested in this are participating in it. And the greatest majority, actually, of those who do engage in daily acts of nonviolent resistance to the occupation and who are developing strategies and who actually do trainings and workshops are from the Muslim community. The Palestinian Christian population is a very small minority in that. So, for example, the city of Nablus, which is in the north of the West Bank, which is 100% Muslim population, has been a highlight for the Palestinian nonviolent resistance movement. And again, media ignoring this important aspect of Palestinians. As far as solutions, I think that a solution is possible. And I think that healing is possible, and an ending of fear and mistrust and insecurity on both sides is impossible. And again, I will try to put even hope in this current roadmap that is happening, but with very important aspect added to it, is that the populations on both sides have to reach the point of recognizing each other's right to exist as equals and as human beings, and that would be the launching point of that. And to me, that is done by the development of a nonviolent movement in Palestine, and also very importantly, in Israel itself. The Israeli population has to rise against the extreme elements in Israeli society, and those especially who are in government, and demand of them, through nonviolent resistance, to stop the oppression and aggression against the Palestinian territories. It is a long process, but I believe it is possible. It's not a dream of mine. If it was a dream, I wouldn't be doing this work. It is something that I work on a daily basis when I am there, and we do see signs of success, and we just have to keep developing that more and more, and with the support of groups in the United States and in Europe, and hopefully also an understanding by the U.S. government that for the sake of Israel and for the sake of its own interests in that region, peace is very important, but a peace that is also founded on the principles of justice for all parties involved.
All right, Sammy Awad, I want to thank you for joining me here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is Rockin' the Boat. If people want to contact Holy Land Trust, there's a U.S. support office, and you have a website, right, Sammy?
Yeah, the best way to find out more about us and contact us is through the website, and it is very simple, www.holylandtrust.org.
All right. Well, thanks for joining me today here, Sammy, and we hope to keep in touch, and we look forward to a day when all can be living in peace.
Thank you very much, Vinny.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And that's going to wrap it up for us tonight here on Rockin' the Boat. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned.